Meow. Hello there, cool cats and kittens. This week we're finding a new king
That
jungle and cats out of the
you
bag.
spent
It's
that.
Wakanda forever.
This is what you were debating?
Meow.
That you spent
this is
that
what you were
long
debating.
coming up with that.
I finished it before you guys were done with your conversation. I just didn't want to interrupt.
So
I had a lot of time to fix it, but nothing else was coming, all right?
that was the worst cold open I think you've ever done. Because you did something relatively similar for cats.
I just hope you guys forget about that. Listen, it's not my fault we keep doing cat-themed content.
No, apparently that's because it's favorite movie. Like, it's definitely your favorite movie.
I should have just done
Panthers
the exact same.
Don't go meow.
I know, but I wasn't
going
to go
cat.
Roar.
That's only bad. Yeah.
They're a big cat. They're like little cats. They probably purr.
That's disgusting. They're a big cat. They're like little cats.
Okay. Yeah, I guess, yeah, they're like little cats, but they can murder you.
Okay, sure. Like, okay, if you took a chihuahua and you made it 500 pounds, it could also kill you, but it is still fundamentally a chihuahua.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I don't know what the fuck's going on.
What does it have to do with a completely separate species? All right, whatever.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. To 3-2-1 binge. I'm your host, Chris, with my co-host, Faison.
What's up?
And
I'm so defeated after your cold open, man. I'm just disappointed.
I've broken his spirit. It took a long time. It took over 100 episodes, but I've finally broken Faison's spirit as I buy time. I don't know, a really ugly Power Ranger suit. Tyler Zucker.
What? Oh, yeah, I got it.
There isn't really a lot. Okay.
I thought you were insulting the Power Ranger who died.
No, I wasn't going to insult JDF. I can't remember his name, but I know his initials.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan?
No. Jesus Christ.
Oh, F, never mind.
And he's illiterate, ladies and gentlemen. What a catch. This week, it might be clear. I don't know. We're doing Wakanda Forever, which recently came out about a week and a half ago, I think, by now. Probably.
Yeah, wow, I think so. We watched the opening week, which was it's been about a week and a half.
Yeah. At this point, if you haven't noticed, we mentioned it before, scheduling is terrible, and some of these are going to be a little, not out of date, but away from the release date.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. We have a plan.
That's right. This one will be up soon, like tomorrow morning.
Also, happy Thanksgiving.
If I remember it.
Happy Thanksgiving, yes, to all who celebrate. What a strange way for me to phrase that. I don't know why.
Yeah, I like the way of like put to all that celebrate. Like, the fuck is this? A funeral?
It's like a deeply solemn take on it. But yeah, Black Panther Wakanda Forever is the sequel to the 2018. Wow, that was more recent than I thought, I guess.
2018?
Yeah, first Black Panther. I thought it was 2016.
I thought it was a lot older, to be honest. At least like 2 years. Like 2016?
That's what I thought.
Seems feels about right to me for some reason.
According to my Google search, 2018.
I guess it just feels like so iconic that like
it really managed to cement itself in kind of like, I think, just like a cultural presence, just because the MCU is so large, and then Black Panther is one of the best MCU movies in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so for those who have been living under a rock, this movie found itself in a particularly strange production. Pretty much right out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
The lead actor, Chadwick Boseman, who played the titular Black Panther, passed away from pancreatic cancer, I believe, in 2020. Tyler, can you fact check that?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I believe in 2020.
Was it 2020 or was it 2021?
No, it definitely wasn't last year.
It was 2020. It was August 2020.
Okay.
And yet this movie still maintained its production without him. Which I definitely know, you know, at least for me, when hearing about that, it was such a strange thing to see that
they were still going to do a sequel or still do the movie without him.
I mean, a bit of both, I guess, like that they were going to do a Black Panther film without T'Challa as a character. And then more specifically without Chadwick Boseman, who, I mean, his performance in the first Black Panther, I think, is one of the best parts of the whole movie.
Oh, for sure.
He
oozes charisma. He absolutely oozes charisma in every single scene he is in. I mean, even just the scene where he's like, as you can see, I'm not dead, is one that just sticks in my mind because it only works because of the line delivery. and it's done so well. So, like, you know, doing it without him just feels like such an impossible task that I wasn't really sure how they were going to go about it. I mean, there was a lot of theories like, oh, yeah, you know, someone will take the Black Panther mantle. Makes sense. You know, that's happened in the comics. Definitely what was going to happen here. But it just felt like such a hole to fill that you never really could be. That it almost felt like an impossible movie to me.
They did do a relatively good job, though.
Yeah, I do agree.
As a way to continue the story and as a tribute to him, both like in character as Black Panther and obviously him the actor, it's a great movie.
Yeah, I think it does a very clever decision of leaning into the fact that as an audience member, you're going to be feeling this void where Chadwick would be, and kind of allowing both the cast as performers and also as characters to kind of lean into that feeling as well, right? Like, our main character for this movie is Shuri, played by Letitia Wright. And throughout the entire film, she is effectively still grieving the loss of her brother, who she was unable to save, despite being the smartest man in the world.
Yep.
Right off the offset of the film, T'Challa dies.
I will say that opening scene is great. They hold the camera on her as she's like walking around trying desperately to save her, trying to build this like manufactured heart.
She was trying to build a flower.
What was it, the flower?
It was a flower she was trying to make,
Okay. Either way, she's trying to do that. She doesn't do it in time. He dies. I wish the scene was longer. Just like of her, like when the queen comes in and says, like, hey, she's like, the queen is dead. And I wish it was longer and it kept a long take angle because it would have hit harder. Like, you're with her in his last moments, too.
She's not with him, right?
Like, exactly.
That's the big, great thing about it.
I wish it was a longer take. Yeah.
I would have liked that a lot as well. I do think it catches you so off guard, that sequence, because we were still talking. Usually there's a bit of time at the beginning of these movies. You can just keep chatting a little bit. You know, we were talking about trailers and stuff. No logo popped up.
I don't know, but you can tell it was going to be like a somber mood in the beginning because they didn't even play any music or anything like that.
That was what got it. The sequence just hard starts pretty much right after the trailers end, before even any like logos or credits pull up. And it kind of just like took me aback. I kind of just like sat back like, oh shit.
Like we're in some serious shit already.
Yeah. This is gonna really pull at us here. And I mean, it fucking does. We follow that up with a funeral sequence that is extremely emotional.
That might literally just be every actor legitimately crying about Chadwick. The first 20 minutes of this movie, but I was thinking about it, like, this is not acting. You literally just film people crying.
Yeah, this movie opens basically with a massive tribute to him.
And then the beam.
And then
takes you right out of it.
Man, I really hate that special effects are just not being given the time they need to be finished.
Yeah.
Because, man, that is such a weird image that they have there that I don't know why they even chose to go that route. I don't understand this. I kind of would have expected maybe they would bury
him in Wakanda. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess they wanted to maybe show like the elevated technology of the Wakandans and this culture. But visually, it ends up feeling a lot like
Beam Me Up, Scotty.
Beam Me Up, Scotty, or the Simpsons bit. I need to go back to my people. And then
it doesn't look good. And it takes you right out of like this emotional state that you're in. At least it did for me.
I agree. No, it was extremely jarring for me as well.
The emotion comes back when it gets to the Marvel opener, and it's just every moment of T'Challa, and there's no music played, and everyone's actually silent for once. So that was a great moment.
I mean, I definitely got emotional during some of those some of those tribute scenes early on for him.
Yeah,
it's great stuff. You know, and then from there, you know, we end up in this interesting place as an audience of like, I guess, not really knowing what the movie was going to be. Even with the trailers, it wasn't clear. My predictions for the film ended up being
completely wrong.
Completely wrong.
All wrong.
I did, however, make a prediction in the middle of the movie to Tyler. I made a prediction to you in the middle of the film with no evidence whatsoever, just a gut feeling. And I did turn out to be correct on that one. So
you
want to
say it now or you want to save it until
we... I guess we'll save it until we get to it narratively. But no, my initial pitch on the film...
Wakanda being colonizers was
somewhat, but not exactly.
It was basically just Wakanda being the bad guy.
Sort of, yes.
What do you mean sort of both? That was literally your
yes. That my expectation done. Of the film was, and I'll clarify it here, that you know, I looking at some of the early parts of the movies, it felt like there was some stuff that could have worked in that way. You know, like let's say Telokan has vibranium, and this now affects Wakanda's ability to be the only country in the world with access to that resource, and it allows potentially the rest of the world to be in a position to catch up to them technology wise and put them in a position of subservience against them, right? And to kind of finally take over in the way that the rest of the world is clearly trying to. And then my expectation would have been, you know, Wakanda, in order to protect its own interests, would attempt to seize the Vibranium in the ocean, thus leading them into conflict with the not really Atlantean people. I think they're called Telokan people, but I might be just getting that horribly wrong. That was my expectation for how the narrative would start. We end up more or less on the reverse of that. And I'm going to be honest, I think 90% of my expectation for that was just I didn't want Namor to be the bad guy. I did not want Namor to be the villain.
Yeah, no, you really didn't want him to be the bad guy. He obviously is the bad guy in the movie, but for if you want to compare him to Killmonger, when people said, like, oh yeah, Killmonger had some good points, like, Namor kind of has better points if you want
Namor
to do that too.
Namor has significantly better points than Killmonger.
But Namor's also, like, resolution to his points is the same thing.
It's the exact same thing. That's also the exact same as Killmonger. They're both great villains. So far, those are two of the best villains of the MCU.
Oh,
and
for sure.
I guess minor spoiler for the rest of the movie, we're talking about the whole thing. But the fact that in a funny way, you know, a lot of people felt like, shit, did Black Panther 1 end up wasting Michael B. Jordan, his performance, because he kills him, he dies at the end. And turns out, fucking no. We did not, because we end up getting a Michael B. Jordan scene in this movie, and it's amazing, and I can't wait to get to that in more detail, but I just want to say I'm really happy that that was a villain that was not wasted.
I will say that the first scene after the first scene after we get through the whole funeral and all that is Namor's entrance, and that scene's so good.
I think that's actually a little bit later, but more or less, right?
What's in between?
I'm pretty sure the court case.
Yeah, okay, it's in a car with it.
And Wakandans fighting the French forces who are trying to steal the vibranium.
Yeah, that's all, like, intercut with it. You're right, that one's first.
Yeah, but, I mean, those are, like, you know, minor scenes. We basically see that the rest of the world has their eyes on Wakanda. They see them as weak because of the death of T'Challa, and they want their resources. The same way that, you know, obviously these movies are, both Black Panther movies are pretty deeply political, and they are very clearly saying something about the real world. And I think that just goes without saying right off the bat. And then we get, the Namor introduction scene. And holy shit, an amazing sequence. I don't know why I would. There are so many little things this movie does to really kind of have a lot of influence on specifically like Native Hispanic culture. So like the Native peoples and the Indigenous peoples, rather, and influence that within Namor's character and his people and the story, and I'll get to some of them later because I really fucking love some of the details, but using them as sirens, but less as sirens and more like you know, classic Latin American like ghost stories of like singing women and crying ghosts and all, like La Llorona and all these type of like spirits like that, that those stories are extremely popular in Central and South America. My father tells me stories like that all the time, and to kind of have that influenced in the way that these guys force people to walk out into the water and kill themselves is such an amazing and morbid choice. I mean, so fucking cool.
Even before they start doing that, when the two scientists are underwater and then it's like, oh, what happened to the other guy? Oh, we should have gone. It's like, oh shit.
It's an actual horror movie for about 15 minutes, and it's some of the best 15 minutes in the movie. I fucking love that sequence.
Any scene of Namor is the highlight.
He is a highlight of this film. He's kind of amazing. You know, like, it's kind of just hard to make a character like Namor cool, like, especially like comic Namor specifically, right? Comic Namor, like, they do a lot to make him cool, but I cannot look at him and take him seriously.
Yeah,
which is ironic because I'm a DC fan. But just like, it's like, oh, King of Atlantis, but he has wings on his feet and like pointy face. I don't care for him.
Yeah, when he flew in that first scene, I'm like, wait, he can fly? And then like they explain it, it's like, oh, he can fly. Oh shit.
They fly now? I think they actually make it work really well. They make the flight feel extremely natural. Mm-hmm. Like there's one
like,
sequence,
especially
in the
fight scenes.
Yeah, in the back half fight scene where it's almost like he's like skipping against the air and like kicking against different momentum. it's like, shit, they make his flying look awesome. Yeah. And seeing him fight
like a lot cooler than it probably was in the comics.
Much cooler than it ever than I've ever experienced it to be. I never cared for Namor, and I never thought they could make him cool, let alone like my favorite character in the movie he shows up in. So yeah, we get that absolute horror sequence, which I kind of thought, I was wondering if like that scientist woman who was in the plane was gonna come back.
Just never did.
I guess no. She's just dead.
I'm gonna be honest though, all the scenes outside of Wakanda and like
we're calling it Telokan until we get a better
I don't remember
name.
What the name was. But yeah, all of the scenes outside of those two like didn't really matter. It felt like
I don't know.
I like the chase sequence and the bridge fight is pretty cool.
Yeah, but like any scene that didn't involve like characters from those two areas.
Yeah. He's referring to Martin
to the CIA.
Like, yeah, CIA scenes didn't matter. And then like the beginning scene with the singular focus on that lady on the oil rig.
Yeah.
Just for her to never come back again.
Well, that was more a showcase of Namor.
It's funny because there were some very early rumors about this film, right? That I had heard kind of early on. They were completely wrong. But up until that point, one of the rumors was that there was going to be this woman who'd be captured by Namor, and she would like pretty much be influencing some of the decisions, and she's basically working for Doom. And when I saw her there, I'm like, oh shit, maybe there's some truth.
Like
to
maybe
that
it's
rumor.
Her.
Yeah, and then she never shows up again. I'm like, okay,
oh, never mind.
Wow, that's impressive. But yeah, no, any sequence that has just white people in it is some of the most
uninteresting. I don't want to say it, but
stuff
yeah.
I'll say it out loud.
The movie is 2 hours and 40 minutes. The CIA plot line with Martin Freeman and Julie Louis-Dreyfus.
Crazy how she couldn't even save it.
It's just a subplot for like Thunderbolts or whatever the movie's called.
Yeah, it is. That's all it is.
It's just set up for that. Like, okay, if you want him in the movie, you just need that first scene. It's like, oh, we need the information. It's like, cool. You don't need to follow him. That he doesn't do anything.
Again, so we talked about this in the theater. The movie is, yes, 2 hours and 40 minutes long. It's crazy long. And yet somehow it desperately needs to be either, it needs to be longer, but then also cut in half at the same time.
Yeah, no, the movie definitely feels like, it feels like it should have been a two-parter. We're skipping ahead of ourselves, but like it should have been a build-up to what is basically a war between Wakanda and nameless people. We don't know the fucking name.
Telokan, probably.
Exactly. We keep saying probably. So I'm just saying nameless
just
people.
Look it up. Namor.
But. Yeah. No. The movie builds up to that, and then there's like 40 minutes left of quote unquote the war.
Holy shit! It is Telokan.
Okay, Telokan.
Wow. I never thought I'd be right.
Yeah. So yeah, the back 40 minutes is the actual like fight between them, but it's like, you could have built this up, like you could have had this whole movie as a hype up to that war, and then a third movie as the actual war, instead of putting two movies together and having a CIA subplot that nobody wanted.
I don't think, when you say a third movie, did you mean to say a second movie?
Third as in the trilogy, like it's Black Panther.
Oh, I see. Okay, gotcha. Because I thought you meant this movie into three films.
No.
Like, that was a bit much.
That'd be
that
crazy.
But it's funny because there is, again, we're going ahead a little bit, but there is a distinct moment we'll talk about in a bit where it's like, okay, the movie should end here. This feels like where movie one is supposed to end. And then the movie keeps going. It's like, oh shit, okay, act four. And the movie keeps going. It's like, oh shit, act five. It's like, we're almost to a Gone Girl. We're going to get the legendary six acts again. And it's such a shame because there are a lot of moments in there that you could really see that, like, damn, if they injected a couple sequences here and there to really extend things, and you could even keep the CIA plot line at that point. Because you're splitting, like, what, 10 movies or 10 minutes across two films, basically, like, in total. It's like, fine, fuck it, keep the 10 minutes. That's not going to really make a difference across two movies. You know, but then you can really inject where you need a lot of meat to be. So, let's keep going over chronologically. We get a really fun sequence, actually. Well, actually, I want to talk about Angela Bassett in this movie. She is...
Oh, she's...
Performing, just, damn it.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Every time she's on screen, it's like, if this was a play, you would be fucking on fire right now.
Oh my god.
Who does she play?
The mother. The queen.
Okay.
Yeah. And she is fucking going hard the entire time. I fucking love it. I really like it. Everyone's going extremely hard.
Okay. Her actress.
Who?
How do you pronounce her name? Okia, whatever.
Oh, Okoya, I think.
Okoya, yeah.
Yeah, also and going extremely hard. And I really feel like that must have been the energy behind the scenes here of knowing that this film is like a walking tribute to Chadwick.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of being aware that like every single person behind this production, I feel confident in saying they probably gave 110% for this
movie. Yeah.
And it shows
real,
so much.
Real the weakest part of the movie is the fact that they...
It's the pacing.
...grew a lot in.
Yeah, it's the pacing.
Yeah, it's just too long. The only main issue. That's really it.
It's too long, and yet also at parts too short.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some production design choices.
We'll get there. Those are like a genuine, like, there's such a detail that shouldn't bother me, but they stand out so much that they really affect
Power Rangers.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, no. It's
the Power Rangers slash Predators. I don't like those suits either. But we get a great scene where Namor introduces himself to Shuri and the Queen. And holy shit, if the actor, I'm probably going to get his name wrong here. Tenoch Huerta, I think is how you pronounce it. I don't know how to pronounce his first name. That's the one that kind of gets me.
I don't even know what his name is. Let me check.
But he shows up, and it's just such a, like, listen, we're going to play ball, all right? Or I'm going to fucking kill you.
Yeah.
But he does it in such a way that's extremely charming. Like, he says the most threatening thing you've ever said,
heard.
He says
it so, like, nicely.
He says it so nice, and then he, like, flashes a smile. Like, it's fine, guys. It's, like, extremely disarming.
Like, I'll just kill you guys. No,
I'll just kill
deal.
You guys. It's no big deal, you know?
You guys have a week.
Slight spoiler for Better Call Saul. There is a character that is just like that, and he's the best villain in both Better Call Saul or Breaking Bad.
Oh, that's exciting. We really got to get to that at some point.
Mm.
But that whole sequence is extremely, extremely fun, just getting to see Namor. And, you know, throughout the movie, we get a lot of great sequences of Namor, which I always want to jump around because I want to talk about Namor specifically, because there's so much both that has been done and I feel can be done via flashback, but I'll get to that later. We learned that there's a scientist who has made a machine to study vibranium. And this is character's name is Ironheart. I think it's Riri Williams. I think it's Riri Williams. The name of the character.
Yeah, she's kind of a small negative in the movie because she's not used as a character. She's used as a plot device.
I do not care for her very much. I guess she has like a very minor character arc, but it's like a very small kind of like stepping out of like your shell kind of thing, you know, going into this larger world.
Yeah, but it's not, that's not like a real character arc.
No, like she's not really a character in this. It's like it goes like, I don't know. I don't really. We talked about it after the movie that the whole, oh, every kid's a genius. And it's like there's like 50 of them. And you being a kid genius isn't like that special anymore.
I like when the MCU, each movie is kind of like, they recently feel like they've been experimental for better or worse, where movies tend to feel distinctly different from one another right now. And, you know, the mileage on that will vary. But I was pretty happy that this movie was playing it very serious. And there was some humor, but it was very subdued.
It wasn't like the typical Marvel humor, but it wasn't like too over the top.
Yeah.
It wasn't a mile a minute.
And then she shows up and her entire character is like talking fast and making jokes. And that's like 90% of what she's doing here. And it just really kind of fucked with the tone for me in the second act, especially
some of her lines, not even when it's trying to make a joke, is just like the very first line she says is, oh, you forgot to Venmo me. And I'm like, you can just say,
oh,
hey.
Yeah, this was like very forced on there.
It's hello,
yeah,
it's fellow like, Gen Z.
It's like, yeah. You can just say pay. Nobody who has ever, like, you can just, no one has ever said, you literally Venmo me like 20 minutes ago. I didn't say Venmo me. I said, just pay me.
I just say I'll Venmo you. I don't know. I am that person, to be fair. But I do stand by the fact that I think there's a lot of lines in this movie that are very like, oh, hello, fellow kids kind of energy.
That immediately dates it. There was another line in there, too, that didn't need to be said that way, but I forgot what it was.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, because I remember having like that one, the second one specifically, like stick out to me. But yeah, I think overall, I when I heard Ironheart was going to be in this movie, I was like, that's another character to add in. And that feels like a lot for a movie that's already juggling quite a lot of conflict to begin with. I don't feel like she's well utilized. I don't particularly like the character. I feel like she threw off the tone. I'm not a big fan of how Ironheart was handled here, to be honest. I think I really wanted to be in the second.
It's set up for her own show. I think that's the main problem of a lot of people with Phase 4 is that every movie is like, oh, it's set up for this. It's like, can we just have a movie that like is a movie?
That is the entire MCU that has never once changed. Every MCU project. I
agree with you that, yes, every movie does build off each other and then it sets up something else.
I don't even mean it like that. I mean, every movie has basically been, here's the next, we're setting up the next thing. Like I that is the majority of the MCU, especially in phases.
But is it as blatant as this of Ironheart just being in this to set up that and a CIA shit?
I'm gonna look up the MCU movie list because I don't really keep these mentally on deck.
Because what did Guardians of the Galaxy set up, minus like setting up its own sequel?
Well, it also set up the Infinity Stones with like the most actively having an Infinity Stone in its hand. Like that being a major plot line of the film.
But I guess it never felt so blatantly
that's what
obvious
I mean.
Was the setup.
It's not, it's not in the same, I don't think it's the same way.
Because
there's not like, yes, you're right. The stones are in all those other movies that set up progressively going to build off something. But it's not like, oh, we have this character here for 30 seconds. Or not 30 seconds, a character here as a plot device and you can find out more later. It's like, it's not, like, the old movies didn't really do that.
No, I get what you're saying, Tyler. I kind of agree with you.
Yeah.
I would have to actually bother watching early Marvel again. To truly say, I think I'm looking through the list. I can definitely see what you're saying. I'm kind of surprised. I felt like I would have been able to think of a lot of them off the top of my head, even just looking at the list, but I can't actually seem to do so.
Right? Like,
so maybe I'm
just thinking back to it,
Tyler.
Yeah, Phase 4 definitely seems like they did more. Like, Shang-Chi is the only one that I think is like, yeah, that's a movie. That one didn't purposely set up another one.
Like,
No Way Home kind of didn't do that either because it was the end of a thing. So you can't it set up him being.
You can make the argument it's setting up a trilogy, but you can make that argument for anything with the sequel.
Yeah, but like that's another different thing. It's like, okay, that wrapped up his thing. Yeah, he can keep going, but like it wraps him up. But everything else is leading off into it.
I find that really funny. Shang-Chi is a sequel. I mean, I would make the argument, I can't believe I'm saying this, Eternals technically doesn't do that.
Yeah, but that means you have to have watched Eternals.
Yeah, you have to really suffer, unfortunately. God, that movie's such a fucking mess. I want to talk about it just because I want to tear it apart. Because that movie is a structural nightmare. There's so much shit about that thematically and narratively that just is all
Hey, we'll throw it
place.
In as a easy one movie week.
Yeah, we'll toss it in for a week where we just get to bully. We get to bully. I get to feel justified in not liking Nomadland. That's what it is. It's a week where I get to feel justified.
Nomadland's still fine.
I don't like it. Anyhow. So we get the college student. We get this whole chase sequence. It's mostly fine, except for the chase sequence was good. I think really the chase itself, I think, is okay. It's the end of the chase that I really like.
Well,
fight sequence. Yes.
Yeah,
that
seems great.
Get in.
That
the choreography in every actual fight sequence in this movie.
Amazing.
Is excellent. Absolutely.
Minus
excellent.
Like the end one.
I like the end of
I think the choreography was still pretty good in the fight.
Yeah.
I think the
I don't what are you complaining what is what
the fight scene had other issues with it.
I'm guessing maybe I'm thinking about the other issues, but I mean this is the best fight scene, the bridge one. The bridge
I'm very
one.
Curious
the other one's
to see
less.
What you're referring to about the issues in that.
I'm guessing I'm still thinking about the production design, but even
design and stuff you mean specifically. Yeah, no, that's all terrible. But for example, Namor versus Shuri, that final fight sequence, I think is excellent.
It's good. I would still take the bridge fight, but that's still good.
Yeah. So we get a great fight sequence there. We learned that the Atlanteans are fucking beasts who could definitely destroy the world if they wanted to.
Immune
to bullets. They have water bombs. They ride whales. They are blue. I mean, they're fucking crazy.
They are blue.
It's a massive advantage.
Only when they're out of the water, though.
Only when they're out of the water, which took me a phase on a moment because we were wondering.
It took me a while to realize that.
I know you told me. You're like, why the fuck are they not blue? And I'm like, oh fuck, that's how it works.
Yeah, they just never mentioned that. I feel like.
You know, I'm kind of fine with that. I kind of like that it was just like, oh, you piece it together by looking at it. But damn, I feel like I feel a little stupid that it took me.
Took me like half the movie to realize it.
Ultimately Shuri ends up captured by Namor, and we get to learn a lot about the culture of the people underwater, how they were blessed by the god Shaak, the Mayan god of rain, and he provided his people the ability to live under the sea. Unfortunately, they were forced to never live on land again. He was the first person born under the water and was born a mutant on top of that, hence his flying wings on his feet. And now I get to talk about Namor's character, which is finally all I really wanted to do. I fucking love Namor's character in this. There's a lot of, so I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of little things I like that they changed with Namor to really fit this native people's kind of aesthetic and like very Latin American aesthetic overall.
Mm-hmm.
One thing they did was they make him, the people worship him as Kukulcán, right? I always normally say Quetzalcoatl, so I always fuck up the other name. But it's basically a Mayan and Aztec deity, right? One of the, probably the most important deity in their mythology, right? And he's a winged
random
serpent.
Note, why the hell is there a game called that?
What?
the second word you said, Quetzalcoatl. Yeah,
Quetzalcoatl makes sense. I mean, there's a game named there's a game named Hades.
I know, but I don't think the game has any connection to like.
Oh, nothing. Not even mythologically at all. Just
no, I don't think so.
Okay, well that's just fucking funny. So they made him based off of that god, and the people worship him as that living deity, right? In the comics, the comparison is usually made to Hermes or Mercury, which is like the Greek/Roman god with like wings on his feet. Yeah. So right off the bat, I think that's an amazing little change. I think it actually does a ton to really kind of like deepen the world building they have set up here and just make that work really well for me. And then the second thing, which I love even more, is they fixed his name. I can't say how true this is, but it's always felt like his name, Namor, comes from the fact that he's called the Submariner. And it was just kind of a play on the rhyme.
Yeah, like there wasn't a real meaning behind his name.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like Submariner, Namor. Yeah, we got it.
Yeah, we're close enough. We got it, guys.
Well, here we see that the first time he goes back to the surface worlds, maybe about 100 years or so, not even, maybe 50 or so years after, you know, his people had returned to the water to bury his mother, he finds that the Spanish colonizers had enslaved the native peoples there. And in a fury, he burns down a plantation there. And he kills a bunch of people, and him and his people kill a bunch of people. And there's a priest who's bleeding out, and he says, "You know, you're a child without love, sin amor." And then he decided he liked that, and he took it, namor. And I was like, "Oh fuck, that's so good."
Yeah.
That is genuinely one of the. I saw that, and I was like smiling. I was like, "That's fucking amazing! What a fantastic little change to make Namor an extremely interesting character, because he hates the fucking surface world." Kind of for every reason. When he's been alive for 500 years, he's witnessed tons of atrocities to his people on the land. And he's pretty much hidden the Telokan's people as far away from surface world business as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And now that he's kind of pretty much on the spotlight here, he really feels like he should just burn the whole fucking thing down. Because he's fueled by nothing but hatred and severe issues with the loss of his mother and the world she was ever able to go back to. And I think that all works extremely well. I also think that if there were two movies, there was an excellent opportunity to really expand on that for Namor in a way that I would have really liked. In the comics, he's a member of a team called the Invaders during World War II. So it's like him, Captain America, an android who was the Human Torch, and Bucky Barnes, eventually known as Winter Soldier, right?
Yeah.
So they're a team during World War II, and they fight Nazis and all that good jazz, right? And I think that the idea of like retroactively saying, yes, Namor fought alongside Captain America in World War II, right? Namor saw the Nazis, right? So he saw what atrocities humanity was capable of on the surface world at that point, and he fought against it. And then Captain America disappears in the cold, right? And it's basically just Namor and, you know, maybe the Human Torch at that point, if the Human Torch is still alive, let's say, or is even evolved. We see the Human Torch once in the MCU so far. But, you know, so he sees that, and then he sees the side of the war he's fighting for drop nuclear bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki at the end of the war to conclude it. And it just feels like a very strong way to have your character hate humanity even more, in that the one time that they chose to kind of reach out to the surface world and help in a conflict that wasn't directly his, he only was reaffirmed in his belief that the surface dwellers are absolute bad monsters, and
yeah,
will murder each other.
Suck.
They're fucking terrible. They commit genocide at the drop of a hat. They have nuclear weapons now that allow them to destroy cities in a day. They put people in camps. Like I think that if we had the chance to really expand on that and a potential history with the surface world, it would make his hatred feel even more vindicated, mm-hmm. and thus as an audience make you feel even more conflicted. So I really hope we get that retcon eventually, because I think the Invaders is something that should be in the MCU, and I think Namor having more ties to humanity that really deepens his hatred would be just perfect. And I really ever since I thought of that when I was like home after the movie, I was like, fuck,
this
I want
needs to
this
happen.
I want this so badly. This is like, and you know what? I hate to, you know, I said this at theater, right? And this is where it might get a little bit fan servicey at this point, but I kind of like the idea that I said that I like the idea that as a mutant, we lean into his mutant heritage here a bit more, right? Him and the mutants of the surface world are both going to be considered outcasts as we get them. And I really like the idea that we modify the island of Krakoa and we make it something kind of like a Atlantis rising from the sea, where both his people and the X-Men, the mutants, can live together, right? Which would, by definition, pretty much give him ties to Magneto, who's the leader of the Mutant Brotherhood. And allow them to get, and also I think the founder of Krakoa, if I'm remembering correctly, that's all a little bit fuzzy for me. but definitely a major player on that island. And it would also be something that it, this would be where it like it really crosses a line. But due to the fact that I still stand that Magneto should be a Holocaust survivor, even in this adaptation, just say he ages slowly or something. I think it needs to be a part of his character. I wouldn't
there's
mind.
No
if
way
he,
they're ditching that.
There's
no way
they should
it.
Not. They desperately should not. It is critical to his character. And if they do that, I would like the idea that either he heard about Namor and the invaders, or perhaps potentially even had his camp freed or something by that, but at least was aware of Namor, so that when they do meet, I think an interaction between them could be even more layered with that World War II history. So I think there's a lot really at play for Namor in the future. I think there's a lot of interesting things they can do with him, and I'm really, really hopeful. I'm hoping against hope that they do these interesting things with him, or at least something similar.
Yeah, and just not leave him like out to dry.
Because I truly do not know how I feel about the war they're kind of setting up, because it's going to happen probably in Thunderbolts, it looks like, or at least Thunderbolts is like a major component, and I don't know. I don't think I care about that movie still. So we'll see.
Thunderbolts is going to be a weird movie.
Yeah, I don't care really much about it. I do want to see Harrison Ford as the Red Hulk. That sounds stupid. So I'm all here for that, but
was
I don't
it
know
in his clause that he dies in this movie?
You need to kill me off in the first act. I'll go red once and then you shoot me. And you never make me do another MCU movie. I can't believe he's doing this. What a ridiculous thing. Harrison Ford
100% was a lot of money. 100% was
oh,
a lot
for
of money.
Sure.
They said we'll let you. They were like at the production of Indiana Jones 5. Said we're gonna stop this movie from coming out if you don't join the MCU. Damn it! And he's like, fine.
Does Indy die finally?
I doubt.
Or does it get to find the Fountain of Youth, and that's Harrison Ford's curse that he has to keep doing Indiana Jones movies?
They did say they are going to use this the effect to make him younger. I'm assuming that's for flashbacks. But hey, you mentioned Fountain of Youth, Tyler. You're the one who just worded that into existence.
Called it.
You called it. Yeah. If he drinks from the Fountain.
Do we know what the hell the plot of that movie is?
No, we don't even have. They didn't even give it a subtitle, so we don't have a fucking clue. We know his goddaughter is in it. Like not.
Yeah,
not,
it's
not,
yeah, it's goddaughter. No.
Fleabag.
Phoebe. Bridges Waller.
Bridges. Yeah, that was close.
Not Phoebe Bridges. That's a completely different person.
The girl from Fleabag is going to play his goddaughter, which is an interesting choice. I'm very curious about the movie. I want to trust James Mangold because I loved Logan, or I really liked Logan. I guess I still have issues with it, but I don't know. I after Temple of Doom, I'm just a little bit touch and go.
After Temple of Doom?
Sorry, Temple of Doom. Crystal Skull.
You lost the indie series after the second one?
No. I actually loved The Last Crusade a lot. Last Crusade is like a personal favorite. It is my favorite, and it's purely for personal reasons. I just really love Sean Connery's performance in that.
I mean, I always loved my dad's favorite was Temple of Doom, and for a while that was my tune. For some reason, people did not like that one.
People do not like Temple of Doom. I rewatched it relatively recently. I still enjoy it. Damn it! I think
it's a lot of fun.
I think the opening sequence is great. It's like a mini story.
It's the only one with the minecart, isn't it?
Yes, it is the only one with the minecart. But I like how that's the requirement. Donkey Kong minecart is what's necessary for Tyler to like the Indiana Jones movie.
Hey, you basically roller coaster on Disney or Universal, wherever that's at.
Oh,
and
my God, it's probably Universal, yeah.
No, I'm not. Is it Disney?
No, it was Universal. It had to be Universal because Disney didn't acquire Indiana Jones until they bought Lucasfilm.
I'm looking that up.
It must have used to belong to Fox. And if it used to belong to Fox, that doesn't make any sense still. So, I mean, I don't know. Apparently.
The first thing that comes up is Disney.
All right, I'm just wrong. I'm just wrong and stupid.
Great. Why is this?
It's nice to have that affirmed.
Yeah, it's in Disney. Either way, what are we talking about? Black Panther?
Yeah, Namor, excellent character. And I love his sequences with Shuri, where there's like, they basically bond over the fact that they desperately want the world to suffer for their losses, and they fucking hate it. However, I do find myself with a slight issue with Shuri's character here, where I do wish that her hatred to the world felt a bit more explored. I understand that's
yeah,
like,
it's just kind of mentioned.
Yeah, like I understand like she's grieving her brother, so she hates everything right now. And she's kind of like, you know, closed into herself. But I would have liked if they maybe explored the idea that, you know, the other people are trying to take advantage of Wakanda just because her brother's gone. She's not really having the opportunity to grieve because everyone else in the world is trying to take advantage of her, you know? And I think that would be a really good justification for why she says she wants to burn it all down. And, you know, again, another nice little parallel to both Killmonger and Namor.
And Namor, yep.
A lot of great shit there. Then things go south. And then we get we've talked enough about it for it to clearly feel like movie one should be ending.
Yeah.
Which is where it should be, because we get the first invasion of Wakanda. We get Namor committing acts of terrorism.
You're on board for allegedly. You are on board for a lot of him. He's like, oh, he has some good ideas. Terrorism.
I unfortunately did say pretty early in the movie, I am going to forgive whatever war crimes Namor commits, but I really didn't think
war crime. I
didn't think he'd I didn't think he'd kill a named fucking character. I
still don't like that she dies this way.
I am so torn on it because it is perfectly within character and how it all works. I think it makes perfect sense for the queen to sacrifice herself to save anybody, you know, even, you know, Ironheart, who's not technically Wakandan.
Yes.
I think it works character wise. It's also very hard to bring Namor back from this. Like, holy fuck, you murdered the queen, dude.
Is it hard or is it just impossible?
I think that's why you got to side in with Magneto. I think you got to lean hard into the anti-hero after this. There's no Avengers buddy up team up after this. He's just got to keep
committing
war crimes.
You
got to
go away for a couple movies.
He's got to keep committing war crimes, I think. I think that, like, you don't fix him. You just accept... It's a feature, not a bug, you know? He just occasionally commits a war crime.
He occasionally just murders queens.
he will on occasion commit an act of terrorism. What are you supposed to do about
occasionally,
it?
Occasionally though. Not all the time.
So you side him up with like with Magneto, with like, I don't want to say Doom. I feel like he'd commit terrorism on Doom, honestly, and I'd like to see that. But like, you know, just put him with some like equally bad influences and just let him rock. And then from here, we get eventually Shuri. We get Shuri using a plant fiber given to her by Namor in order to complete the heart of the Panther, which she is able to ingest then to become Black Panther. And this is actually another issue I have with the movie a little bit. I think that there are two thematic inconsistencies, one of which I have mostly kind of like pieced together and made work for me. And the other one I haven't. The one I made work for me was the idea, like, there's this whole thing with Shuri about, like, tradition versus technology. Mm-hmm. She's, like, hard into the tech, and her mom's like, you know, you gotta accept tradition. Tradition's important, you know? She's talking about, like, in grieving, Shuri's like, science says there is no afterlife. And whereas her mother is like, I feel T'Challa, like, touch me, you know, in the back. Like, I feel like his hand on my shoulder, even though he's gone. Stuff like that, right? And it never feels like that theme is super resolved. Like, you can make the argument that her like sensing her mother is like an acceptance of tradition, but it doesn't really feel that way. It just kind of feels like something that happens in the heat of battle where her mother reaches out to her. So it never feels like there's this moment where like she accepts how important the tradition of like Wakanda is and how that is part of their culture.
Yeah.
And that's significant. So I can't remember how I've kind of validated for myself. I think there was one scene in there I was able to make work, but overall I do wish that was definitely ironed out a little bit more and it made a little bit more heavy-handed, honestly, in the theme, because I don't feel like it really got to be resolved as much as I'd like it to. The other issue, and this one really can't be fixed easily, is I don't like how every time Namor does something that's not a war crime, it bites him in the ass.
Yeah.
Like, when he does war crimes, he's winning. But anytime he's like, I'm gonna be nice for 15 minutes, it's a huge mistake. Like, he brings Shuri down, he tries to convince her, and then it gets somebody killed. He gives Shuri a gift that belongs to her mother, and then he gives Shuri the power to beat him. He gives the Wakandans a week instead of just like water bombing the city down, and it allows them to like every time he does something that is not actively terrorism, it fucks him up, and it creates like this weird thing where he's not being defeated because of a flaw, like a hubris or anything. He's being defeated because he's kind of being a nice guy at points. And it's just really weird, and it doesn't feel like that's how it should work. It feels like he should be losing because of some sense of, like, you know, there is an issue with his ideology that creates a crack in his personality, right? Not like, I'm going to give you my mother's favorite piece of jewelry, and you're going to turn it into a weapon to destroy me. It just feels a little strange.
Yeah, it does feel a little strange. I'll admit that one.
Yeah, that one for me, I have a really hard time, like, fixed, like, trying to piece together. Maybe on a rewatch something will click, but as of right now it's like, God, that feels weird.
I mean, yeah, you bring it in now, it's funny. It's like, oh, war crimes make me, it's like, war crimes are good now. And then it's like, you know what, let me be nice. And then it immediately turns back. It's like, huh, maybe I should start killing people again.
It's like, that's the lesson you learn, right? If like every time I was a good person, something bad happened. But every time I committed a minor genocide, something good happened. I'm learning that genocide's good. Like, that's what the world is.
That's what you're teaching me.
That's kind of what it's basically saying, is it not?
It's weird. I guess maybe it's because it's like looking at, like, you can't look at him under the lens as like a main character with like a traditional arc, because he doesn't really have one in that.
Well, no, he is an anti-hero, and Marvel like positioned him as an anti-hero. He's not a villain. He's not a straight up. I'm bad for bad's sake. It's just, you know, he's an anti-hero.
Yeah. So I really wish that was worked out on. And again, I think that simply expanding why he hates humanity and adding stuff about his history with people, I think, again, a second movie with time to explore him very heavily, because like if you end the first movie with him murdering the queen, everyone's position on Namor is like super anti-Namor, right? Because mm-hmm. It's like, holy fuck, he murdered the queen. You spend more time in the second movie with Namor and kind of almost frame Shuri's whole like vengeance thing as a negative, as you learn more about Namor's motivations, and you can really fuck with your audience perception of those two characters. You can do a lot to like kind of muddy up how they're going to feel about them in that final fight, where we've just spent a lot of time learning about why Namor is the way he is. And we just spent a lot of time seeing Shuri want to commit murder really, really bad. Speaking of which, we get to see Shuri want to commit murder really, really bad in a sequence that I found really funny, because she comes down, she's in the Black Panther suit. Everyone in the theater starts clapping. Yeah, everyone's cheering. And I look to Tyler immediately and I say, that clapping is going to age so poorly.
I was smart back. And then 30 seconds later, when she's like, we got to kill everybody, I said to Chris, so this is Danny in season 8 again.
It's so funny how fast it happened. It works narratively. It's unlike Danny. I don't think it's rushed personally. But
it still feels like, okay, this part could have been like the middle point of the two movies. Like, it could have been like a little break here.
A second movie would help every single problem this film has. But it's so funny seeing everyone cheering and then hearing like the silent mutterings when she's like, talking about like, I want to go to war and murder him. And everyone's like, no,
let's not do that.
We also, at this point, we get the great scene with her and Killmonger when she takes the plant. Instead of seeing her brother or her father or her mother, she sees her extremely villainous cousin. And I think that's so fucked up and great. What an amazing
twist. It is, right? Because
of
her mindset while taking it was that I'm doing this for vengeance, right?
Yeah. It showed her what she wanted to see. And I fucking love that sequence. What an amazing twist. Like, that's a good twist right there. No need for a crazy, like, look who came from the comics reveal. It's just an amazing character-based twist, and I fucking love it.
Or we've somehow used old footage of Chadwick. It's like, oh god, don't do that.
I'm
glad they didn't do any of that.
I was so worried we'd get some of it, and I'm really happy we didn't. I do love that whole sequence, and I love how Killmonger's armor is like a very large inspiration to her current Black Panther suit. I really like that fact as well. Just kind of, again, another little parallel between them there. We then get the final fight, which has a lot of really great moments. I love the Telecon people climbing up the ship on the whales. I love the one person trying to put the bombs in the sonar machine to make it explode. The whole actual fight between Namor and Shuri is
really
insane.
Well done.
Insane. When he fucking stabs her through the chest, I was like caught off
you feel
guard.
It.
You feel that. I was absolutely shocked. Like, they are fighting against each other to the absolute last bit of themselves there.
Yeah.
And it's such an impressive sequence. I love that whole sequence. We also get the most disgusting fucking suit I've ever seen. I hate the Ironheart suit with such a passion.
Every suit, like, everything that Shuri made looked disgusting. Sorry. Like, it is just what it is, right? Like, it all just looked disgusting.
Like, the honor guard suits for Okoye and her people, they look like Predator suits almost with the eyes. And I don't like them. I really don't like a lot of the suit design here. I don't think we needed to go so, like, I just don't like it. That's all there really is to it. I think all the suits in this like that look pretty bad, which is a shame because the rest of the fight sequence is really good. I like seeing how, like, it looks like they have the advantage at first, and then suddenly they're getting pinned down to absolute shit. And the real crux of the sequence is, like, Shuri knowing that even if she kills Namor, they see him as a god king.
Yeah, it doesn't solve anything.
This will not end the conflict. They will go to
war. No, if you kill a god, all the followers will come kill you.
Yeah, and her people are right there getting murdered on the boat right over there. They're like about to get pushed off the ship and be killed. So she kind of has to make this judgment call. And I think it works really, really well. And, you know, she has this moment. She sees her mother. Her mother kind of pulls her back from the dark side, so to speak.
Yeah.
And she makes the call not to kill Namor and instead to try and broker peace. And this is the only sequence I might have liked something just a little bit strange. Like, we get to see the mother, yes, but I would have liked a bit of a full circle moment on how the mother implied that she's able to feel Chadwick's hand on her shoulder. And I wouldn't want to see Chadwick or anything, but I might have liked the image of like an out of focus hand on her shoulder, or maybe just the in focus hand and everything behind the hand out of focus to imply, like, you know, she feels T'Challa's presence here. Kind of in that moment, kind of, you know, because he was the compassionate king. And I had said when I was making my expectations for the movie that, you know, without him, Wakanda would be lost because he was the heart. And I was I was partially right and wrong on that. I thought it would be his mother who would have been the most lost person there. That was where I completely misjudged the character, because it ends up really being Shuri who's most lost without like him as kind of this guiding star compass figure in her life. And I think having a bit of a full circle moment there, I would have appreciated that if they could have pulled it off without necessarily having to show us Chadwick per se, you know?
Yeah, I see that.
I don't know if it would end up being good. It might have ended up being corny, but I think I would have liked it in concept at least. From there, Namor allows for priests. Allows for priests. allows. For
let's discuss that one.
that one priest who we see dying in the beginning. He kept him alive this whole time. He's finally letting him go. Allowed for priest.
Anyway.
Yeah, he sues for peace. He stops the conflict. And me and Faison look at each other, and Faison tells me that he feels like that was a real easy way for him to like forget his grudge.
Yeah.
it feels that way. And then I like how later in the movie someone's
clutching. It's like literally him. 5 minutes later.
I think every time we say something like that, 5 minutes later is like a payoff of some kind. And I like it because this one's like woman's like, I fought with you. What the fuck is this shit? And he's like, are you dumb? Are you stupid?
This is like the biggest long con of all time.
I am playing 4D chess. The white people are going to fucking attack Wakanda. You know who they're going to come for? They're going to join us. And then we're going to burn the fucking planet down. It's like, God damn it, Namor. You're so kind of villainous.
I just didn't expect Marvel to do something like that.
The long con strategy?
Yeah, I just didn't expect them to do it.
You didn't expect that one?
No, I
thought it was just going to be like, yeah, I agree. I thought it was going to be like, and they're buddies now.
Namor's learned, you know, that maybe all people aren't that bad.
No, I didn't think they're
like,
gonna
damn,
go for that.
Was I racist?
I didn't think they're gonna go for that. I was more worried that he was gonna die.
I was also worried.
It seemed that at one point.
I wasn't scared.
Yeah, it would have been kind of cool though if Shuri would just like fully embrace the dark route and just murdered him.
God, just evil Black Panther.
Yeah.
You would have needed some major structural changes to make something like that work, but it would have been a fucking wild take.
It would have.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been a wild take.
To me, that was more likely than the, we're all buddies now. It was either he gets captured or what they actually did, which is, like, good. It's like, oh, okay.
I thought maybe captured was an option.
The captured one was what I was leaning toward.
Yeah. And that's most of the movie right there. At least that's pretty much everything of major significance. A couple other things I'd like to hit. M'Baku is fucking amazing in this. Or M'Baku.
I don't know why. I was at Timbuktu. It's like, the fuck was... when did that get you?
M'Baku. You just combined both of them.
Yeah. M'Baku's great in this. I like that he's now this older brother figure for Shuri. I think that works super, super
well.
Also,
I'm guessing he becomes king at the end.
Yeah, he becomes... Yeah. I think that's the implication. He becomes king at the end while she goes to... There's one sequence there fucking cracked me up where, goddamn, Lupita Nyong'o's character, she's like, she has a sequit, just sequit. Fuck.
You can't talk, can you?
Can't speak English. It's not my first language. That's not true. It's my first language.
Actually, no, you can use that lie. It totally works.
Yeah, I don't have a language. I can barely speak this one. She has a secret child with Chadwick, with T'Challa that she hid, you know, from the rest of the world. And there's a line she says where she's like, I wanted to take him, keep him safe. So I took him to Haiti. And I immediately said, to Haiti?
To Haiti? So I took him to him. Really?
They were in the good part.
It's like, I just like on the news, like these last couple of weeks, Haiti has been like in a terrible state. And just to hear me like, yeah, safest place we could think of, Haiti. It's like, okay.
As a city's okay. burning behind him. Yeah, we'll save you. Yeah, it's better.
It's one of those things where it's like, man, that's just what an unfortunate piece of timing. There are a lot of other islands in the Caribbean I think may have been better choices here in that case. Yeah, so that was just something funny. But beyond that, I actually do want to say, I feel that I'm trying to remember the name of this character because I don't even cannot remember her name.
No.
The character, Lupita, Nakia's character, does nothing this movie of significant interest.
No, she comes in as a spy, and that's it.
I was so disappointed in that because I really, when I was thinking about what I was hoping this movie would be, I was really hoping she'd have a very major part. I was hoping she'd be
Black Panther, right?
She was actually my hope for Black Panther, which I know was a bit of a controversial call, and I think that the Shuri pick ends up working here really well. But I was really hoping that she would have like a major role in the story.
And she didn't.
I kind of forgot she existed until she showed up.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, fuck. Another character. That's really wild. I also want to say, I'm just looking at the IMDb cast. Not the IMDb cast, like the Google cast on this, right? Martin Freeman, his picture here just looks like a mugshot. And I just find that to be the funniest fucking thing. Everyone else is like has like these glamorous images, and he's looking at the camera like he just got arrested for like drunk and disorderly. I just find that impressive. I think that's pretty much most of the thoughts on the movie. You guys have any major thoughts? Last thing to really talk about, I guess, is the child. But I don't think there's
a
lot
child
to be said.
That's really
there's
it.
There's a child. Charles has a kid.
Charles has a kid.
I will point out during that post-credit sequence. Well, no, we the actual ending is very nice. Like, again, it's another tribute to Chadwick.
She finally
torches his... What did she actually torch?
It's like a funeral...
robe.
Yeah, funeral robe. There we go.
Yeah, so she finally torches that, signifying that, she's letting go. There's, again, more flashbacks to him from the first movie, and she's just on the beach, just grieving. It's a nice way to end the movie. It's a nice tribute to him. Postcard scene... Lupita's character comes back saying that, oh, yeah, I had him here in Haiti for safety. And then he has the whole, like, oh, yeah, whatever his, like, Haitian name is, like, oh, that's not my real name. My real name is, like, T'Challa. The woman who gasped at that, like, what else would his name be? What else? Like, it's not my real name. My name is T'Challa. What fucking other name would it be? Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God. That person was so caught off guard. It felt like they were so confused.
It's not my real name. What do you expect? My name's Greg. Yes. What else would his name fucking be?
I can't get over how absolutely shocked that woman was. It was amazing. It was like the wind was like taken away from her there. And absolutely fucking cracks me up. Holy shit.
Funny. I didn't even realize that at the time.
I know exactly. She was sitting like in the front row, very first seat.
It was a loud gas.
It was a gas. And I looked at it and I was like, what else would it be? Really?
A gasp like that, you got to keep private, man. That was like a loud, embarrassing gasp for something that was very clear.
I'm not even mad about the gas. Like, sure, you can be surprised in a movie, but that's not surprising.
Yeah. I mean, no, don't. I'm not saying the gasp itself. I just mean the gasp at this.
Oh, yeah.
This was not a twist or a shock or anything of the sort. But dear God, if it isn't fucking funny in retrospect.
What else about the... Oh, I just remember there was one line at the very beginning of the movie that was very fucking stupid. It's when the queen and Shuri were talking and she's like doing something with her computer. It's like, and the queen says, oh, those machines, I think one day will take over the world. It's like, mom, it's not like the movies. Like,
oh, yeah, the AI.
Ultron fucking happened. What?
Yeah.
Met Vision.
That was like a major event in like human history. Like Black Panther got brought into the Wakanda, like the Accords because of that. Like that was like a pretty big
thing. Forget Ultron was a thing?
You worked on him. He literally was an AI. What are you talking about?
Like the sentimental AI that tried taking over the world. Did we forget about that one?
It's just absolute, pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, the moment that happens, like, all right, this is a rocky road already. How the hell did you miss
it? It happened early, too. That was the worst part.
Yeah, it was like the second scene.
God, it's just so, yeah, that is right. That was a really fucking funny moment. I can't remember any other major lines sticking out to me, though. I think aside from that, I think it's a solid movie overall. I like the first one more.
Oh, yeah. The first one is definitely tied in. This one's main problem, we said, yeah, the pacing, the fact that it's 2.5 hours, and, like, the small spots. But, no, overall, it is solid. It's at best when it's, like, a tribute to Chadwick.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... I mean, it's like, top three movies that... Phase 4? That have came out in Phase 4. Maybe the best movie that came out in Phase 4.
Second favorite for me, but we'll go over that in a minute, actually.
Third, I guess it's me. Like Shang-Chi, right?
Yeah, that's my number one. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we can, yeah, sure. Let's rank the Phase 4 ones.
Yeah, we're at the end of Phase 4. So, have we seen all of them?
Not Eternals.
Okay, so I've seen Eternals. I've seen Eternals. We're only doing movies. We can ignore shows. There's too much.
Phase 4 movies. I gotta see which ones these are, though.
Eternals is my bottom pick. Obviously, I feel like
We're not making the entirety of Phase 4, are we?
Just the movies.
No. I mean, like, I thought we were just doing top three, but all
right. No, we just might as well rank them all as 5, I think, right?
Okay,
like
yeah, wait, let me actually see.
I think Black Widow's worse than Eternals.
It's you know, I think Black Widow, I think both movies have cool concepts. Like, there's an idea, the idea in Eternals that these are, like, borderline angelic figures forced to rebel against their god, but it doesn't actually do anything good with that idea
again,
whatsoever.
Eternals just drops, like, the biggest, like, Marvel like lore hint of all time.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool like conceptually
in just like casual conversation, by the way, like
yeah, a lot of like cool stuff thematically and like conceptually that just doesn't pay off there. And then in Black Widow there's actually some pretty interesting concepts when you think about it regarding like female anatomy and like not anatomy, autonomy, and well I guess
time
also
out.
Sort of anatomy in this case, also sort of anatomy.
Okay,
because Black Widow, you know, her whole thing is like she was trained in the Red Room, she's unable to have birth, she's not able to like have children at all, she was forced to be made sterile in this training, and it's like a big thing for her in earlier movies in the MCU. So like this movie, you know, there are some like hintings of themes of like, you know, autonomy for women, right? The movie I don't think ends up doing anything particularly interesting with these themes, nor do I think it ever gets the chance to pay off on them. But you know, both of these movies had concepts that could have been cool if done well, but they're both really bad movies.
Yeah, I think looking back at it, Eternals would have been so much better as a show.
Eternals needed
to be a show, because you can't introduce like six brand new characters in like a 2.5 hour movie.
I genuinely feel like that's not even the biggest problem with it. I feel like it manages to like backtrack on every interesting theme and concept that could have been there and just completely trip all over itself in the process. Like maybe I think making it a show could have helped expand on the plot, which is convoluted as it is.
Yeah.
But if the narrative goes the way it goes, it's still going to be bad. Because
that's true, but I think if it was a show, it would have like the narrative would have been better.
I agree. I think a show would have been a better format, but it vindicates me not liking Nomadland. For me, my second worst pick is going to be Black Widow. I'm going to assume Tyler, that's your least favorite.
That's where I'm starting off. Yeah,
mine's going to be Eternals at 2, second worst.
fair enough. From there, I'm going to go Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness.
I think I'm going to go...
This is a toss-up. My top three is locked in for me, so that's...
Spider-Man for tough for you.
I didn't like Spider-Man very much.
I don't know if you remember.
Yeah,
no,
you did not. You definitely did not.
Quite fun, though, just having that like that hot take in here. I find that enjoyable.
I'm going to... Like, this is the hill I'm going to die on.
I respect the person who will die on a hill. I think I'm going Thor.
So like I don't Thor respect that hill that Tyler is willing to die on.
Yeah, I don't respect that hill.
Because the direction for Strange really helps it, and I do think it's more consistent than Thor. Even though Thor obviously has the way better villain. Gore is like the second best villain of Phase 4.
I think Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness has a very good arc for Doctor Strange, and a lot of fun visuals. But the problem is almost nothing else. In its writing.
I'm gonna be honest, I don't even remember what happens in Doctor Strange.
Wanda go bad.
Oh yeah.
That's the movie. There's a lot of really fun visual scenes in there and everything. I just think that the script it's very apparently that this was the third attempt at the script after the first two were thrown out. And this script was written as filming was still in the process. which has never once helped a movie ever.
Oh no!
So
definitely
it feels very. I feel like all that ends up feeling extremely clear when you watch the movie, and it also just makes me. I understand that COVID apparently fucked up the first script because the whole team pretty much broke apart after COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So like I can understand that definitely didn't help, but it really feels like something went just other things must have went wrong in this production because, man, that just it just feels sloppy all over the place. My next pick. This is where it gets tough for me because it's basically between Spider-Man No Way Home and Thor Love and Thunder. And I think that personally for me, it could really toss up like Day by Day. I think actually this is a lot harder for me. Tyler, what's your next pick here? While I buy time. Both of you.
Oh, what was mine? It was Black Widow, Thor. Yeah, Strange.
This is Tyler Strange. Yeah,
mine's the Doctor. Well, mine was you haven't said your third pick, right? Chris?
So wait, did I like just completely skip? No, my third pick was Doctor Strange.
Okay.
Well, no, the order's messed up because I'm not counting Eternals because I haven't seen it. So.
Yeah. That's what it was. Okay. Mine is Doctor Strange.
I'm going to go.
I liked it more than Spider-Man. Yeah, I liked it more than Spider-Man.
I think Spider-Man's direction is just really bland. And I feel like that hurts it a lot for me. I think there's like some sequences I like, but overall, I think especially in the final fight, there is some just really bland direction in there that I didn't quite enjoy. And it's weird because there's a lot I really like. And I can't tell how much of that is nostalgia and how much of that is the film. So I find myself in this weird, I always find myself in this really weird place with Doctor Strange, right? I mean, with Doctor Strange, with Spider-Man, where like, I don't like that first act. I liked the second act a lot. And the third act, I like a fair bit, but dear God, I don't like that first act at all.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Spider-Man, but truly it is a toss up between that and Thor Love and Thunder. I think it could be any day of the week. I could see that one flipping around on me. You know, this is today. Who knows? God knows how I'll feel tomorrow.
Mm.
So then that next is our number three pick for, is now we're like our three.
It's a top three. This one is going to be our top three. Yeah.
Yeah. So number three for the MCU phase four.
Thor
for me.
Wakanda.
Well. Ooh. Wow, yep. Wakanda 3. That makes sense. I forgot how much you like Spider-Man. Tyler.
What? No.
Finally, I got to shake it. I'm good. I got rid of it.
Is it both of your number one then? Is that what
Tyler
you're saying?
Tyler was so shocked that I said that.
is it both of your number one then? Is that what you're saying?
I couldn't tell if he froze or his camera did.
I think it's a mix of both.
Yeah. Number two. It's actually Wakanda Forever for me here.
It's tough. I think it's Wakanda Forever for me as well.
You racist.
Because our number two and our number three. I'm sorry, our number two and our number one are both people of color-led films, Tyler. So we are still significantly less racist than you.
Yeah.
Wait, you guys just said
are you saying
two, right?
You can't be racist against Asian people, Tyler? That's
yeah, right. You guys just said your number two? Tyler.
Yeah, that was our black man. That was
yeah, my number two is Shang-Chi.
Yeah. Yeah, well, see, your number one is a white man. See the problem here, Tyler?
Even worse, it's three.
It's What's worse than one white man? Three white men.
Yeah, my number one Spider-Man.
Shang-Chi. Truly, I found Shang-Chi to be such an excellent movie. I mean, I think the character arc stuff with the dad. I think when we talked about it, I had a single critique and it was like the smallest thing ever. I would have liked to change one word in one sentence. That was my only problem with the movie.
Yeah.
Was that. And also some of the humor is a little bit, whatever. But yeah, that's like a mild issue.
That's like, it's just Marvel humor. I think at this point, it's like, I just look over it at this point.
That wasn't that much of a problem for me. Like my only real thing was like, damn, I wish this was different, was to literally change a single word.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good sign for the movie. If that's the worst thing I can think of, is I really think one word should have been us instead of you. But aside from that, I really do think it's excellent. Excellent, excellent film. And now on to the phase four shows. No, we're not doing that.
I actually wouldn't even take very long for phase four shows. Let's be honest here.
We have
we're
one
not even
number
doing
one.
Best,
the best ones,
best
Loki.
Scenes. Well, no, not even that one. I'm not saying we're not even doing best scenes from Wakanda because what we normally would have done.
We're not going to do that? I thought we were going to do that now.
Are we? Okay. I thought we were just doing
Yeah, number three. Right. Number third favorite scene from Wakanda Forever.
Okay, I know my one.
I think Namor showing Shuri his home is my three.
That's oh, that reminds me. We forgot one negative, Chris.
What?
The fucking music videos.
Oh my god, I forgot all about true, yeah. that. Holy shit. Yeah, this definitely is my number two pick now with that in mind.
We didn't mention it. Multiple parts of this movie were trying to copy like the whole Black Panther soundtrack, which yeah, the soundtrack was great. So they tried to input it more here. And by doing that, they made scenes feel like a fucking music video. They play the entire song and it's just like, yeah, in a cove of them talking sometimes, but it's like just scenes of a city or something going on and it feels like a music video.
Yeah, it was a very weird choice for the structure because I think it actually makes the movie feel longer because you feel like you've just watched
it
like,
does,
a playlist
you're just,
of fucking
it's just
YouTube
dragging
videos.
On.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely didn't like that. My number three is actually going to be, and damn, this is much harder now than I thought it was going to be. I think it's actually going to be the fight between Black Panther and Shuri as my number three.
You mean Namor?
Yeah, my sorry. Just the, you know, the internal struggle. No, between Black Panther and Namor, I think is my number three. Oh, I think my top three scenes are very tight.
Shit. Can I take one back?
What was yours?
We don't even
know. I want to get rid of the third one. I put the her seeing the.
Oh fuck! Actually, wait, I want to kind of change mine. Shit, this is actually.
I forgot about the Killmonger
take a minute.
Scene.
The Killmonger
take a minute
scene as well.
And think about
it, because I can think of like four sequences that really stand out to me.
I think I guess it's the opening scene. If it wasn't for the beam me up.
Oh my god, the opening scene. Fuck, I didn't count that one either.
If it wasn't for the like the beam me up, like it'd be my number one. All
right, my number three is the last scene.
Okay, it's just great. I also didn't count that scene in my head. Fuck. I'm gonna have to just kind of go off vibes
right
now.
You just not count any grieving scene?
Apparently not. I counted several other sequences.
But like, I didn't realize how many good sequences there were in this movie until
I like
we,
how
like,
we
until
went
I
from
thought
saying,
about it.
I like how we went from saying, "God, you're right. That was a terrible fucking decision." God, there's so many great scenes. I don't know what to do.
I mean, there are, right? There are so many great scenes, but the movie still could have been half an hour shorter.
Okay, I'm gonna go for number three. I'm gonna change it a little bit. I'm gonna say it's the scene with Namor as a child where he goes on land and
about that one too.
See, that's the one that's really difficult right now. It's the one that's making me struggle. I'm gonna go for that as my number three right now. The Namor scene. I love that one. Oh, it could be even higher on my list. It's really fucking hard.
Number two.
Okay, I want to switch my number two and my number three.
I swear to shit.
My number two, which is actually my number three, is gonna be the siren scene.
That's my number two.
Yes, that's your number two. I'm making that my number three. I'm bouncing Namor scene up.
I'll go with the Shuri and Namor fight.
Okay, number one.
My number two.
This was number one.
Number one is. Oh, fuck me! I forgot about that.
yeah, see you, Tyler. You're talking
fuck
all
you,
this shit.
Tyler, we got you too.
Okay, wait, hold on. Killmonger 3. Killmonger 3. Everyone jumping to the watery death, number two. And number one is the bridge fight.
Okay, I'm gonna actually rewrite some of my sequences as well. I'm gonna go Killmonger 3, Namor Child 2. And then phase on what's your number one while I buy time.
My it's Killmonger is number one.
Oh, fuck! I don't have to even fucking think now. Fuck.
I'm the one that started this conversation.
The minute you brought up Killmonger, fucked everyone's list. I was like, God damn, we all forgot it.
Fuck! I don't know what to do. My number one, I guess. I think I'm gonna actually go for the final fight scene here, but I do want to say Namor's line of bury your dead, you know, grieve your losses. Your queen now goes fucking hard. As another sequence that I think is amazing. I'm gonna go for the final fight between Namor and Shuri. And that's the binge. God, that was a fucking hard list.
Yeah,
that was the first time we've ever struggled that much.
Debating which was the best of the scenes in the movie somehow was very hard because we didn't actually think about that until now.
Yeah, it was easy to fucking rank the movies. Like that was like really simple. But trying to think of like only three good scenes. Out
there
of that
there
one
were
hard.
Very a lot of very 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 good scenes.
Yeah,
The movie is good. Still could have been better.
It's kind of crazy. Phase four is over. It's also kind of crazy. Phase four actually only had like what, six movies? I guess
seven.
Seven.
Did I count it wrong?
The fuck was the seventh movie? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. No, you're right. I'm bad at math. Okay, never mind. That actually is quite a fair amount of movies. That's like a solid amount for a phase. I guess it just feels like that went by really fast.
Because they all came out relatively, like it felt like the first, I don't know, I guess the first three or four movies came out at the same time, and the next three came out at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. I think the problem again has just been the shows. You know, I feel this is a good time, I feel, to talk about like a wrap up of Phase Four because we wrapped it up. Just so many shows, and I feel like that's just too much content. And I mean, there's obviously no need for like as an individual to bother watching it all. I think a lot of it, honestly, especially of the shows, feels pretty skippable. I genuinely stand by the fact that if you don't watch WandaVision, Multiverse of Madness makes more sense somehow. I mean, it's just like super fucking backwards. But it's like, yeah, if you just don't watch the show, and you this just works way better.
Comes in that, oh, Wanda's crazy, by the way.
Again, it's like, we're just going to completely undo her character development. It's like, okay. Yeah, I mean, I think the shows have definitely been the most disappointing part of Phase 4, and I think that's more where a lot of people's negative opinions come from personally. I think the movies are just like the same rate of hit or miss as they've always been. I think it's the shows that bog everything down because there's just so much of it. And so much of it ends up feeling very non-critical, honestly. Like, outside of Loki, I don't feel like I'd say like, oh man, you really have to watch any of the other ones.
No, you don't. It's really just Loki.
It's just Loki. And I mean, that's and I think all of our opinion, the best one.
Yeah.
And I'd say just like a couple episodes of What If.
I don't even think you need that because none of them are canon.
No, you don't need to, you don't need to watch it. But
you don't need to,
like,
but I mean, like, they're all good ones in there.
There's some solid ones in there. It's like, yeah, I mean, I'm guessing these things will have mattered more. Like, I'm assuming Moon Knight will show up in a movie at some point and they won't keep him relegated to the TV shows. And then it'll be important. But like, it just feels very strange. I will say, I don't think any of you guys have seen Werewolf by Night, have you?
No.
Not yet, but I heard it's great.
It's great. It's actually so much fun. I really fucking enjoyed that.
I mean, isn't that the same thing with the, not the same thing. People already said that the Guardians holiday special is great.
Is it out?
Soon? I don't know. The reviews are already out, so.
How the fuck? Okay, if that's already out, I haven't seen it. But, you know, maybe they should focus on, instead of doing full-length shows, do these little like 45-minute thingies, these little like hour and 10-minute.
Oh, it comes out Friday.
Oh, cool. I'll watch it probably Friday. Like, I've really liked these spotlight presentations more than a lot of other content. I mean, Werewolf by Night really is a lot of fun. It's such like a classic Universal style horror movie. I had a blast with that thing. Thought it was damn fun. But that's The Bench. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for this one. Tyler, sign us out while I
happy
figure
Thanksgiving
out...
everybody great okay, reviewers Tyler. Please let us know if you liked Black Panther Wakanda Forever, if you liked the first one more, if you think it deserved the 2 hours and 40 minute length. It definitely did not. What was your favorite scene? Is Namor the best villain, I guess we'll call him? He's an anti-hero, but whatever. Is he the best villain of Phase 4? Yes, I will. Is he the best villain of Phase 4, arguably?
Yes. No. Damn. Yeah, yes. I'm gonna say yes, but it's close.
It is close. Yes. Yeah. Great reviewers. Let us know. How you think of Phase 4 in general? Follow us on Twitter. 321binge. Is that ever coming back up?
Do you? Yeah. Tati was supposed to do like 4 times. She was on the show and she was like, "I'll do it for this one, I guess." And she just proceeded fucking not to. She was here last week. Damn it. Also, this episode is brought to you by Audible. Click the link that might be in the description, I don't know, and get a free book on us. Get the Marvel Black Panther novelization, written by Jim McCann and narrated by Ike Amandi. There is also a bunch of other Black Panthers, like a lot of Marvel. I don't know, just get a fucking Marvel book or something. What am I fucking telling you what to do? Click the stupid link or not.